It's horrific.
It's just so draining. Like, I don't even, as I'm speaking to you right now, the Inspector General of Police does not have any iota of shame to even tender in a resignation. You know, Nigeria is just so, like I said, they're so comfortable. They have no shame whatsoever. You know, there's no level of, oh, I am not competent enough for this job, or I am failing at my job. You know, like if I was working in a, let me just give an example. Let's say I was working in Sony, for example. If I was consistently doing awful, there is no way, if my higher-ups keep calling me into the office, okay, let's even say my higher-ups don't even keep, let's say the customers kept complaining about me, honestly, as a reasonable, decent human being, that job is not for me. Because surely I would feel some shame that these customers, they don't want me there. Let's even start with that. Let's forget the fact that I'm not even good at my job. They do not want me there. People are hurting. Because we're in so much pain. Forget these protests, man. We're in so much pain. There's so much trauma, each and every one of us is carrying around. It might not be police brutality. It's something that the Nigerian government has just done to just, you know, just push you down and just make you suffer. Just make you suffer. I saw a story of a that was so heartbreaking, of a lady. She came on, she tweeted that her family, ever since the police killed her brother, he just acts like he doesn't exist. Or he never existed, rather. They don't speak about him, nothing. You can imagine.
I am Daniel Itomi, your host, and welcome to the 20-something Experience podcast, where we listen and learn from the lives and experiences of young adults across the world.
So today's episode is all about SARS and ending SARS, but it goes beyond that, because the problems around SARS is not just with the organization, it's widespread. And today we'll speak about the experiences we've had with SARS run-ins, and we'll speak about the protests, and we'll speak about the wider problem that forms Nigeria, and why we are so motivated to keep protesting, to keep standing, and to keep making noise until we see a change. And I'm joined by my friend Chinedu to speak about this. Thank you for joining them, Chinedu. So I'll get right into it. What are your thoughts on the protests?
Thoughts on the protests. It's been a long time coming. The Nigerian youth have been angry for a long time. Police brutality is something that has been plaguing us for a while.
Exactly.
From young boys to queer people to women to literally any young person. I wish there was some sort of way we could check statistics, because we don't really keep statistics in Nigeria. But if there's a way we can check statistics, almost everyone, if you haven't had a story from SARS or from the police, you have a friend that has a story from SARS or from the police.
Yep.
So I think the protests have been, it's been a long time coming, and yeah, everyone is fed up.
Honestly, the problem with SARS specifically, do you think it is specific to SARS, or is it a wider problem that is just kind of that is heightened because they are in a position of power in terms of being police?
I think SARS, I don't know how we can vet this, but I think it's a mix of both, because SARS have definitely, that unit has definitely been the one that has given the most issues, but it's not restricted to just SARS. So obviously they were charged to stop armed robbery. I can't remember when they were formed. I think it was in the early 90s or the late 80s. I cannot remember. They were charged to stop armed robbery, special anti-robbery squad. And right now they've turned into something else. Their officers don't have uniforms. They don't wear uniforms. They run around in unmarked vehicles, unmarked small buses, unmarked bikes. They have no identification. They have no uniforms. So they run around literally like they are rogue agents. They have no control whatsoever. But this doesn't mean it's restricted to just them. The ones in uniform commit just as bad, like just commit crimes just as bad. They are not exempt from any of all these problems. But SARS definitely, because of that lack of identification and the lack of, you know, proper control over that unit, they definitely commit more crimes. And because they feel like they are charged with, you know, armed robbery, they feel like they can go around just doing anything they like, really.
So, yeah. I was reading, I think, the origin of SARS, and they were actually set up in it, like they were supposed to move around with like on plated cars. They're supposed to move around in without uniforms because they're supposed to be what's the word, covert. So like they're supposed to operate like in the background, investigating and everything. But it's almost like at every road stop, and there was a number that I think I can't remember what year it was, but I know it was in the past decade. That SARS had gotten up to 90 million naira or dollars from just things like bribery from like roadblocks and road stops. And it's like, let's like take that first issue in terms of like the bribery and the stealing and the bullying, and like let's look at that independently. It's like that issue is not just SARS. It's like when you think of Nigerian police, I don't think there's anybody that I know that's young enough anyway, like around my age, that actually genuinely respects the police. Because when you say police, we were not alive when police was great. Do you get? So when you look at the entire police force, like they're just people that are underpaid. They don't do their work. If you want something done, you just bribe them. And some just take advantage. They take advantage of that fact. When you have young people and in cars, and they just kind of like, it's like you almost don't know the playbook that they use. I was reading an article, I think it was by Pulse Niger, and one guy was an interview, I'm not sure, but the guy was saying that, I mean, if you're young looking and you're in a 7 million naira car, and he was like, if you basically don't look like you're supposed to be, so you're supposed to be in a car of this caliber, then I have a right to stop you and demand to check your phone. And I'm like, is that what the law says? You know, so
that is the sort of mentality that plagues us. And you know the thing about SARS is obviously they have their very own problems, but the older generation have allowed things like that to run.
You
understand? Profiling is a very, 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 very terrible, terrible problem amongst the older generation. You know, all these churches now that are coming out to say, you know, anti-police brutality, are they going to let people with dreadlocks into their churches?
Yeah.
Are they going to let people with tattoos into their churches? Are they going to let people with dyed hair into their churches? I want the older generation to be straight with themselves. They have contributed to this problem as well. Obviously, they're not committing the crimes, but this sort of mentality is what plagues us. This profiling. And you know, until we need to stop the profiling first. Not everyone that has a tattoo is, you know, tattoos doesn't mean you're stealing or you're committing crimes. And even the people that are criminals. You know, I don't like when people, genuinely, I don't like when people say, I'm not a criminal. Am I a criminal? Criminals do not deserve what SARS gives, dishes out.
Exactly.
No criminal deserves what SARS dishes out to people. No, every criminal deserves a right to fair trial. Every criminal deserves a right to fair trial. You don't deserve to be kidnapped and extorted. You do not deserve to be held at gunpoint to withdraw money. You do not deserve that.
Honestly.
It has to follow due process. There's a reason why there are laws in the country. It has to follow due process. You know? And now all of a sudden they're talking about due process.
When they were not following this before.
They're talking about due process, you know? there are things that this government has implemented to make Nigerians suffer, and they implement it the very next day. The very next day. And things, this is an issue that has been plaguing us for a long time. You know, it's so sad.
It is, honestly.
If the protests didn't come about, I would never have learned about so much. SARS is terrible, but I did not know they were this terrible.
Yep.
You know, there are some stories that I've read that have been absolutely gut-wrenching. They have been disgusting. I don't know how human beings can commit those crimes to their fellow people and, you know, be okay with themselves, sleep well at night.
Mm-hmm.
It's exhausting.
Honestly,
it's exhausting.
What's the most terrible story you've heard?
There are so many. There are so many. One I read today, well, I didn't read it just today, but I found more info about it. But the guy that was in charge of the Okuzu unit in Anambra State, I think it's James 14, CSP 14, because I'm not sure about his first name. I'll just say CSP 14. Allegedly has killed or overseen the killing of 6,000 people during his reign.
Wow.
During his reign as the top person in charge of that unit.
Wow.
The person who wrote that thread said, as of the time he's writing that thread, he's very sure someone in that unit is being killed right at that very moment.
Huh.
Right at that very moment. He made a father go through corpses looking for his son. How evil can you be? And you know, this country is so terrible that a state governor heard the cries, heard how people pleaded to this man. This man is an evil person. Do not appoint him. And you know, Nigeria being Nigeria, this man appointed him to be a security advisor. Security advisor. We have so many problems in this country. That is the most terrible story I've heard. And there are so many more. There's one where I heard that they shot a young guy who had tattoos and he was begging. This was caught on video. He was begging to see his family, to talk to his father, to tell, let me tell my dad I am dying. And they were laughing at his face. And this man died. He died pleading to talk to his father. How evil can you be? And this government is coming out every day to tell us stories. This panel after this panel, who is your leader, this and that. It's so painful. It's so painful. Honestly, every time I talk about it, I don't even realize when my voice gets so high. It's so painful, man. It's so painful.
It's filthy. It really is. It's horrible. It's, you read it and it's like me. It's like I've, ever since it's come out, there's a lot of it that I almost kind of, I put myself at a distance, because I know once you start, when you get really consumed into the stories, it's almost like you feel it in your bones, because you know that this could have been you. This could be you easily. One unfortunate evening, do you get, like, how many times over the past year since I came back from uni 2018 have I passed a checkpoint and I guarantee you there's a smell of booze and or weed from the mouth of the person that's supposed to be protecting us. So the person now mistakenly now fires like the gun, like we'll say, what we'll say. And the worst part for me with everything is the lack of, is the impunity. There's no fear of the law, which makes me think that, you know what, this problem is not even about a few bad eggs. This is a genuine problem, because you just don't feel, like the idea of police that will sit there talking about this and talking about that, like those guys on the ground don't fear you. They don't fear repercussions. They know that, what's that common thing I've been reading, that they will kill you and nothing will happen.
There will never be a fear of law when the higher ups have committed, if not as bad, crimes, if not as bad or worse, really and truly. I mean, CSP 14 was a right hand man to the governor of Anambra State, really and truly. What does a SARS person in a unit a SARS police officer in any unit in Anambra State have to fear?
Honestly.
Because at the end of the day, the chief security advisor has done way worse things than him. And really and truly, you can do that thing and get away with it. You can do it and get away with it. I read somewhere that there was apparently, I don't know if there was a panel or there was an investigation into some crimes that Nwafor had committed. And nothing was ever done. Nothing was ever implemented.
See, even in 2018.
It easily can be anybody. It easily can be anybody.
Like, you just be a statistic.
And that saying you just be a number. Like, I was telling someone, like, these are lives. Politicians are so detached from the everyday Nigerian that these are just numbers to them. They see two people have died. It's just two. It's not a life to them. It's not a life. Do you know how many people are in pain over one life?
It's just something else, because stealing is a crime. Because when you look at the numbers, I don't know how verifiable they are, but senators, like, they earn up to 40 million naira every month. And we were speaking about this earlier, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, 40 million naira? Like, who genuinely needs that much money? And I'm thinking, public services...
They earn more than that, by the way.
Like, they probably do, because this was even, like, the quote-unquote legal earnings.
More than that. I think it reaches about, let's say, 25 to 30.
Like, who needs that much money? If you got that money in a year, you would be good. You would be good.
If you look at the breakdown of what they give them the money for, you'd be so infuriated.
Bro, newspaper allowance.
It's newspaper allowance of 1.2 million naira. Bro, I was so heated the other day. I calculated, okay, how much is a newspaper?
100 naira.
I've not bought a newspaper in years. So let me just say inflation since the last time I bought a newspaper. Last time I bought a newspaper was 200. Let me say inflation. Worst comes to worst, let's say 500 naira. 500 naira times 30 days does not give you up to 20,000 naira.
Even if you bought different newspapers.
Even if you bought different newspapers. Okay, even if you bought maybe two newspapers that day, three newspapers, you do not need more than 50 to 60,000 naira. And they are collecting 1.2 million naira. Bro, do you know if you calculate the hardship allowance plus the newspaper allowance put together, that is almost 4 million naira, or let's say give or take 2.5, 3 million naira for each senator every month. If you calculate that times the amount of senators in the Senate, 109, we spend at least 3 billion naira paying these people for hardship and newspaper allowance. There are some people in this country that cannot make 40,000 naira a month. How heartless can you be?
It's just bad, because just I think during the lockdown there was a quote unquote palliative of how many million, and suddenly we will not hear about it. Is it billion? The National Hospital in Abuja, the healthcare staff went on strike. Not national, public hospitals, because no PPE. And it's like, I guarantee you, during this period, I wasn't like, okay, now that we have this issue, let's do this, this, and this. You come out and you talk about, oh, solving this problem, solving that problem. This rep will be faking, fake fainting on camera. Dino Melaya will be dancing about all of that. It's
so
like
ridiculous.
This country is when I remember when David Cameron said that this country is fantastically corrupt and people went outraged. I'm like, it's true. You've represented Nigeria in such a way that this man can come and whisper it. And it's true. Like, what are you getting annoyed about? And it's like, this is a country that, like, it's not that we can wake up and change our nationality. So we can't. We are, like, we're almost stuck with the country. And we have to almost make it great again, one way or the other. And it's just horrible. Like, this SARS thing, just, like, Nigeria is like water in a boiling pot, and this SARS thing is the flame that has, like, lit it to make it spill over. And hopefully this goes somewhere. This is the start of something good. And have you had any personal run-ins with SARS?
Yeah, I did October last year.
What happened?
October 2019. So I was coming back from my friend, she's an artist. So I was coming back from her performance at FEM. So this was around, let's say, 10:30. It was, I think, about 4 or 5 of us. And so we're coming back. We dropped off this friend of ours in Jakonde, Lekki. But the thing is, that friend of ours, her street was flooded. So this was around, let's say, 11 p.m. Her street was flooded. So we wanted to make sure she gets home safely because it was dark as well. And that her area isn't really the safest. And she had spoken once or twice about snakes being in the water. So we wanted to make sure, okay, let's watch her get into her house. And then, so obviously, the place being unsafe, we decided to, you know, drive off when she has gotten to a reasonable distance. And as we were about to exit onto the expressway, this small bus just comes and blocks us off. About 6 of them came out with guns and a marked car. Honestly, yeah, you know, I was the one driving. So literally when they just sped in front of the car and just, my first thought was armed robbers. And in that split 2-3 seconds, I was like, should I drive off? First thought was armed robbers. They came out, they said, everyone, you know, bring out, come out, come out, come out. And we're just so like, they were all having guns. Like, obviously everyone is so shook. And they told us to all come out. They told us to bring out our phones. They wanted to search us, that they saw us officials. They're searching everyone. Unfortunately, there was a grinder in the car. So they saw, one of my friends, obviously knowing how these people operate, dropped the grinder on the floor. And, what happened? So when they saw the grinder, they shoved, my sister was one of them, three, since we had dropped one person, two other friends and my sister. So they shoved my sister by the neck into the bus. Physical assault.
How old was she?
She's 21 right now. She was 20 at the time.
Okay.
They shoved my two other friends into the bus as well. He said, who's the owner of the car? I said, it's mine. He told me to get into the car. There were two officers at the back with guns. There was one in front. They were driving. And Jakonde decided driving off. This was Sunday night. And they said they were going to take us to their station in Ikeja. And, you know, we're pleading with these people. And obviously I knew what they wanted. I knew they wanted money. So I was telling them, you know what, let's pull up at an ATM. Let me just withdraw and let's give you this money. Let's pee on our way. What's the point of all of this? I do, like, honestly, even when police stops you, no matter what your crime is, your first thought is, I know what these people want.
Money.
Because you know police officers do, like, the rot is so deep. You know they don't want justice. Honestly, if I was to do something bad right now, if I was to break the law, and let's say by chance the police officer catches me, my first thought is, this guy wants money. He doesn't want justice. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because that's not what's my first, like, I don't think they are upright citizens. I do not think any policeman is an upright citizen, if I'm being honest. Anyway, so they drove us and they kept driving and they kept driving and they kept driving and I kept pleading. And this police officer pulled up at some point because I said, okay, let me talk to my friend so that we'll be able to talk to each other and gather together, like, whatever amounts we have. And whilst all this was going on, they were going through my friend's phone, going through his chat, going through his private folder of his girlfriend's pictures that she had sent him, that was private for him. Going through these pictures, what is that? What is that about?
Wow.
What is that about? And when we stopped at some point, this man saw food that I had eaten, I think, earlier in the day. And he said, this is jazz. This is what Yahoo boys use. That, I mean, Yahoo boy, my sister and my friend, they were at showers. And me and my male friend that was with us, were Yahoo boys. Where did that come from? And they drove us for 45 minutes to some dark place. And between this, it was such a long night. between in during this drive, they said, what did they even say? That they would take us to Ikeja and no one would hear of us again. Well, they said it to me because the other guys were inside the small bus. They said it to me that they would take me to Ikeja and nobody would hear of me because I was pleading with these guys. I need to make a morning run tomorrow morning to drop off my little brothers at school. So please just let's settle this. And they were saying, by the time we get to Ikeja, nobody will hear of me. And I'm thinking of my younger brothers. And we drove all the way for people that live in Lagos. They know how far, you know how far Jakonde is from Broad Street Marina. They drove us all the way to that place late in the night. And by the way, in between this 45 minute drive, there were random stops where there were thugs and armed and thieves just, you know, causing trouble. But no, they did not face them. They were focused on us that had a grinder in the car. When we got to Marina, we're calling all sorts of people from anywhere, like, because obviously we didn't know how much they wanted. We said we had I think 30,000 naira on us at the time. They laughed it off. We managed to pull together 100,000 naira. When we got to Lagos Island, they told me to go and withdraw from the ATM. These men, they made me walk 2 minutes in a dark alley by myself where there were no lights in Marina, where all sorts of crimes are committed. I was looking over my shoulder. My friends, when we got home, they said they were so worried. I literally disappeared into the dark. They couldn't see me again. These men made me withdraw 100,000 naira in cash, and not one of them thought it reasonable to at least follow me, to escort me, to withdraw this money. I kept looking over my shoulder to see if anyone would rob me. At no point did I think I was going to make it out of that situation alive. Even when I withdrew the money, I thought these guys could still be armed robbers. They can literally just waste us here in Marina and go their way, and nobody will know what happened to Chinedu or his friends or his sister. And you know what's ridiculous? When the entire situation was over, these same men, they said, oh, ha ha ha, let's escort you out of this place so that nobody will attack you. So you know how dangerous this place is, and you brought us here. You know, and this my experience is not even anything compared to what other people have seen. It's nowhere near. They rape people, they rape women, they kidnap, they torture, they do all sorts of things. They have to go. They have to go right away, all of them. And we need to see a register of every single officer that was in that unit of the police force, every single last one. And we need to see that everyone is investigated. And the ones who have been found maybe to be committing some sort of crime, charged. Honestly, I do not care how long it takes.
There has to be that accountability, because once people start to see that, you know what, these crimes are not going to go unpunished, however long it takes, then they will start to respect that the law actually is working. Because that is the first thing you need to do, because you can reform it, you can end it, you can all of that. But an official said this, the criteria for which you hire these people, will it change? Will you suddenly increase their salary to motivate them to be better? Will you improve the environment in which they are trained in?
I can't lie to you, Daniel. I've seen a few whispers here and there and a few tweets here and there, you know, talking about their salaries. And honestly, that I do not care about salaries, because some of these people are just wicked in their hearts.
True, very true.
Some of these people are just downright evil. There are some things, you do not make a man search through 30 corpses in the river looking for his son, and you cannot tell me it is salary that is making that man the way he is.
Yep, honestly. Yep, yep. It's
and you know beyond what's that. So sad? I was thinking the other day, like, this rot is so deep. It's not even just SARS unit. It's even the higher ups, a lot of them have to be investigated. There is no way some crimes, you tell me that the higher ups did not know what was going on.
Definitely.
And some of these higher ups are in such high places now. Such high places.
And they'll continue to be, because, hey.
it's Nigeria. If a thoroughly transparent public inquiry was to actually go, that was to actually be put in place, I'm telling you, it's going to take ages for any sort of developed country to finish to properly clean through the system. That is how deep the rot is in the police force. And at honestly, I genuinely think there is also a human trafficking bit to it.
Yeah.
May not be in the Lagos units of SARS or in the more, let's say, affluent areas. But there is definitely a human trafficking side to it, because you cannot tell me that these people just kidnap people and just kill them just for fun.
Yeah, there's a great article by.
I'm talking about it. It's so mentally exhausting.
It is honestly, man. You know, there's a great article by Pulse Ninja. I don't know whether you've read it. I believe it's called SARS, License to Murder. And there's this point you spoke about. You spoke about how what will happen, like when some prisoners are unable to pay that bail. Sorry, they're unable to pay their bail. That's what some of the SARS officials will do, is they'll go to the prison and they'll like ask a prisoner, tell them, oh, which water do you want? And the prisoner that was given this account said that what that meant was that which water basically do you want to be drowned in? And then they would name two main like water points in Lagos. And what this prisoner said is that when one prisoner goes, they never see him again. And what has been, what they've heard and what they've seen effectively is that these people are thrown into these rivers, and that's the end of that. And it's like, is this like where is the due process? Like, it's like by the time we sit down here, you start to see that there's so many things. Our accountability is in the impunity. There's no respect for the law. There's no due process. There's how do you get away with it? You know, there's no way to identify who these officers are. They don't even show you identification to begin with. So how do you know who is who? And do you think we're in a historical turning point in Nigeria at the moment?
Definitely. I think so, because I don't think anyone can read all these stories, consume all of this, you know, stories about the brutal killings, kidnapping, raping, profiling. There's no way you read all of this and, you know, you do not see this as a turning point for Nigeria, for yourself. I genuinely don't feel safe. So we should, like, this is a turning point for us. And I think this is, everyone sees this as a turning point for us to actually come together so we can actually be able to go around and you know, be able to walk around freely and not be afraid of the people that are supposed to protect us, and not be afraid of higher ups, not be afraid of politicians, not be afraid of power. You know, like, I really, really see it as something big. I hope many others do the same way I do, but I genuinely see it as something big, because right now, I know these politicians, they are too comfortable, way too comfortable.
Far too comfortable.
Not just for the amounts they earn. No matter the work they were doing, they don't even deserve that salary. Let's even be. There's no country that any politician deserves that type of salary, for being honest. And even if they were doing their job, they're just too comfortable. You know, they really think they are in power and they are above. It's ridiculous. And I saw another video. I don't know who is the, I think it's in Netherlands. I'm not very sure. This guy said, who is your leader? And they said, we're all leaders. He said, well, I need you to pick a leader because you have come to my place. Can you imagine my place? If a federal property is his place. And I was so glad seeing them shut that statement right down to the ground. It is not your place. It is our place. It is our place. This is definitely something big that's happening. I know everyone I've spoken to, my friends, close people to me, everyone is fed up and sick of the system. and we're all ready to take this ride right down to wherever it's supposed to go to, honestly, because we deserve a better future than what these people are giving us. Our kids.
Yep, our kids
deserve
do.
Better futures than what these people are giving us. And honestly, it's best if it comes now, right now, before it's honestly too late.
Definitely. I think it's a long battle, and it's a long one. And I feel like ultimately we shouldn't expect immediate changes because of the nature of like you said brilliantly, these people are too comfortable. And before this gets hammered home, I feel like it's a long battle, but we're young, we're strong, we're agile, and we'll fight until we see change, because we have grown up in this situation. We are desensitized to a lot of these things, and this is not the Nigeria we want our kids to see, whether they're in the diaspora or they're here. This is not the Nigeria we want them to see. They deserve better. We deserve better.
Definitely.
And slowly but surely, we'll make that change.
Definitely.
Honestly.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please don't forget to like, share, and comment on this.